Good afternoon and welcome to the Community and Regional Affairs first hearing of the session. Today I've got Senator Ellis, Senator Wagner, Senator Menard, and myself, Senator Olson. Just want people to turn off all their cell phones since this meeting is being teleconferenced and recorded. Now, today's schedule, we've got two bills. First one is Senate Bill 154, having to do with the National Gas Conversion Program and the fund related to it. And then Senate Bill 122, which is the real estate transfer fees and the title plans that are in the bill. Senate Bill 154, we're planning on listening, and 122, we're planning on listening to the bills today. We're not going to pass them out, and then we'll continue with the presentation. With that, Senator Thomas, and your staff will present. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Senator Joe Thomas, District D, maybe District B, not sure at this point yet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for hearing Senate Bill 154. 154 is an act creating a low-interest loan program for homeowners to convert their homes to natural gas-fired heating and creating the Natural Gas Home Heating Conversion Loan Fund. The bill creates a low-interest loan program for Alaskan families to replace their old expensive oil, coal, or wood home heating appliances with natural gas. As you know, we're anxiously awaiting the arrival of more gas in the interior. We have some, but that's a limited supply at this point in time based on what potentially happens in Cook Inlet. So we're hopeful that the drill rigs that have been subsidized to come into Cook Inlet, one being there already and a second one that should be there this spring, that they will actually strike gas, and then we will be more encouraged that we will be able to expand the opportunity to receive that gas into the Fairbanks area, even by truck, although we're also looking at getting gas truck from Prudhoe Bay, as I'm sure you're aware of that process as well. Senate Bill 154 will give families the ability to plan ahead for low-cost energy, knowing that when they do get access to gas in their neighborhood or community, they will be able to afford to use it. Additionally, we'll be able to begin preparing our larger market for our own in-state use of gas, and we expect that over a period of the next few years, we're going to be expanding the use of gas throughout at least the areas where transportation potential is available. The home heating change-out mechanism will create a more robust gas distribution system in the Kenai, Anchorage, and Matsu areas where gas is currently distributed. And I understand that recently, with some of the expansion in the Kenai, that dramatically had an impact on the cost versus where they were using propane, I think is what had been the primary source. Senate Bill 154 will also help to prep our community back home in Fairbanks for delivery of natural gas either by pipeline or by trucking project like the one proposed by Golden Valley and Flint Hills Refinery. I think you're somewhat familiar with that process. They're looking at bringing gas in particularly for their own uses, but they would import enough gas by truck from Prudhoe Bay to expand not only their usage but potentially make it available for home heating. And so they're looking at that rather closely. They'll have a good feel for what they're going to do by probably September of this year, and that would obviously be a big advantage to Flint Hills to be operating with natural gas rather than burning oil, so that will reduce the cost of actually jet fuel and a variety of other products that are being refined that will have an impact throughout the state. By implementing SB 154 and establishing the Natural Gas Home Heating Conversion Loan Fund, upgrading to cleaner, cheaper gas will become affordable for more families and make any gas delivery project much more economic. With heavier use of gas, the Fairbanks community will also be able to get a handle on the air quality problem, which most of you are, I'm sure, aware of that we have in the interior. Changeover of an estimated 12,000 homes from oil or wood to gas would solve our air quality problem. Would also spark our economy, create local jobs all across the state, and keep more money circulating in Alaska instead of being spent on energy costs. We've had many developers in Fairbanks that have dealt with some of the outside companies that want to build stores that are just used to using natural gas, and when somebody tells them the cost of fuel and the potential consumption and what that might be, and as they talk to other people that have built buildings, it turns them off right away to the concept of burning fuel, and they're just not accustomed to it. They're accustomed throughout the lower 48 to using natural gas. I urge you to join me in supporting Senate Bill 154. My staff, Greyer Hopkins, has some additional comments and will be available for any questions. And additionally, Dan Falsky, CEO of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, is available to make a few comments, as well as Jeff Jacobson, the Chief of Staff for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Mayor is also online, and staff from AHFC is available for any questions as well. And I thank you for your time and attention to this matter.
Any questions from members of the committee for Senator Thomas? Mr. Hopkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grier Hopkins. I'm staff to Senator Joe Thomas. As Senator Thomas said, the impetus for this bill was to create a stronger in-state market for any gas that does come out of a pipeline when that gas becomes available, especially looking back home at Fairbanks and the needs we will have there for our gas distribution system. Increasing the size of our in-state market is going to be making any gas line or gas delivery project more economic in the long term. Senate Bill 154 would, of course, be accessible to anybody who already has access to natural gas in their community, and they would be able to work with NSTAR, their local provider, to get that in distribution lines to their homes so that they could get access to the funding mechanism from Senate Bill 154 and switch over and lower their home heating costs. Of course, this would help Fairbanks tremendously, as Senator Thomas said. As we get near to larger volumes of gas being delivered to Fairbanks, we have to be able to prepare our community to know what the financial implications for the families and the economy is going to be up north there. And having natural gas at your doorstep is not going to be all that helpful if you're not able to get it into your home. You have to be able to spend the money to get that new furnace or new boiler into your home in order to get access to natural gas on your doorstep and save the home heating cost. It will also, of course, help spur our economy, keeping more local jobs in the community, installing those, installing the furnaces, and then digging the lines and keeping the money circulating around on our own economy. The Fairbanks North Star Borough recently approved a budget item from the 2012 capital budget for an expanded study of the natural gas distribution system that we have, trying to figure out what would be the correct steps, what would be the necessary business plan to build out our distribution infrastructure that we have there. In your packet, there's a map of the current system that we have and where the pipes are and where they might be laid out in the North Pole area, and showing you some idea of how it could help the air quality problem that we have in Fairbanks also, which shows the in terms of the non-attainment area in Fairbanks. That preliminary report should be available at the end of the month, and with a final one coming out in June or July after session. Any delivery system, of course, like I said, would be helping build a more robust market here in the state. People in areas similar to much of Senator Thomas's district would not necessarily get distribution lines to their homes immediately out in more rural Fairbanks areas where the homes are, you know, 5 or 10 acre plots. And it'd be prohibitively expensive to deliver that gas, but hopefully it would be able to lower the cost of doing business, the cost of energy within town, and help lower the cost for everybody as they we wait and population grows and it becomes more economic to deliver the gas. Again, of course, the South Central communities would be able to expand their own infrastructure in the Mat-Su area, in the Kenai area, and in the outskirts of Anchorage. It would Senate Bill 154 would make available a $7,500 loan at 1% interest to be paid back over 10 years through AHFC's loan program. It must become the primary source of heat at the home, so you would not be able to just simply replace a wood stove but still use heating oil as your primary heating device. It would need to become, the gas would need to become the primary heater for the home. And they have some computer programs that would be able to determine what that system would be and how it would work and what those costs would be. And, of course, natural gas must be available at the house in order for you to be able to use this program. It is not subject to any income limitations. Looking up in Fairbanks, we're going to have a pretty rapid build-out up there, so we didn't want to put any limitations on who could get access to this program as we're trying to bring as many homes on as we can. You have to must be a qualified homeowner to keep the program more simple. We decided to use the same exact definition as they use in the energy efficiency rebate program. Single occupied home or duplex, not going to be demolished soon, so we're not wasting the money, not used as a commercial building, and it's substantially complete construction. The way the loan program would work, an individual homeowner would have to call up AHFC and say, I would like a rater to come out to my house and do the estimate on what those change-out costs would be. They then take that receipt to the bank, which in this case is Alaska USA, which is what AHFC uses for all of their loans, or most of their loans, I believe, and say this is what the energy rate are estimated to, is the lesser of that cost or $7,500, putting that ceiling there. The appliance would then, once it gets put into place, would be paid back at that 1% rate over 10 years. It's a nice, simple boilerplate bill is what I've been told by the AHFC staff, so hopefully that is true as we start to delve into the regs and how they implement the program. One of the biggest advantages of this bill that Senator Thomas touched on, looking back home to Fairbanks, is working to solve our air quality problem up there. As I'm sure many of you are aware, we have the pretty bad wood smoke problem up there because it's just simply cheaper to burn wood than it is to burn oil. It's about half the cost up there, even with expensive cords of wood. But that's dependent on the dryness and the quality of the wood also. There's a letter, I believe it's the third to last page in your packet, from Sierra Research, a company that the borough has contracted with to do a study on what it's going to take to change it around that air quality problem. And it lists about... It would take about 12,000 houses changing over from their current heating devices to using natural gas to clean up our air there. That would be a long time coming, but this program would start chipping in at that 12,000 and solve that problem. Hopefully EPA would look at some concrete steps coming from the state in terms of the community of Fairbanks making that progress towards attainment of the PM 2.5 standards. So this would get us down that road. We currently only have 1,108 total customers on gas up in Fairbanks, and 8 of those are interruptible. So that once the market for Fairbanks is limited out on this gas, whether it's a cold time up there, whether it's just more people turning their heater up, they are maxed out on their capacity that they have up there, Fairbanks Natural Gas is. So bringing in more distribution can bring more homes on, and hopefully we'll in the future find a developer to distribute that gas also. Thank you again. Those are the only points that I have on Senate Bill 54. I urge you to support this, and hopefully we can start getting gas to more homes all across the state. I'm available for any questions, and of course we have Dan Fowski and Jeff Jacobson online. Oh, one more thing, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wagner, you asked a question yesterday when I was meeting with you, and I brought about federal tax credits that are available for these upgrades. And I brought you a little bit of information, but I did follow up on your advice and call an HVAC contractor and a CPA up in Anchorage, and there was an additional tax credit that I was not aware of yesterday that also expired back in 2010 that would have brought $1,500 for an upgrade in your furnace to if you were able to upgrade to a 97% efficient furnace or not. But again, that's
the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
But
it's also off the books. So this is the program we've got.
Things come to an end.
Yes, sir. Of course, I'm available for any questions.
Any questions by members of the committee for
no.
Senator Thomas or staff? I've got a couple questions. One of the questions has to do with how many homes do you anticipate are going to be there the first year, and as you look at the life of the program 10 years out, How many homes are you anticipating going to participate in this program?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a little hard to predict, but Fairbanks Natural Gas already has their system distributed out to several areas of town, but because of the lack of natural gas, they can't hook them up. So there's probably, I would say, roughly 1,000 that are close at hand. And of course, every time you take in an increment of that amount, then it just helps the business operate and generates more opportunity for others as they would then start to expand. And the maps that you have indicate which areas would be looked at next. And, of course, they looked at the most dense areas to begin with as far as the distribution, because that's the easiest and cheapest manner to do it, obviously, is to those that have the most dense population and housing.
So if you look at the numbers and multiply 7,500 times 1,000 people of new customers that are there, you're talking about a fair amount of money that's going to be going out in capital.
That's true.
And at 1%, the return, I guess that just doesn't seem to be, at least from a lending institution standpoint, at least the numbers that I usually get, 1% is pretty low ball number.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we'd all like to have a 1% loan.
Yeah.
Especially on our home mortgage.
Okay. Senator Menard, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. If I continue on, as you look at this bill here, which is kind of unusual, is there any other programs like that that we have in the state that has something like this where you get a low-interest loan for heating your homes?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, I believe there are several others, but I can't give you any details on them, and I know that there are several others being suggested this year with different bills as well. So, but I think Greyer looks like he's itching to answer that question as well. So if you'd let him, he might be able to help us there.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The closest program that we modeled this idea on was the energy rebate program. It's a grant instead of a loan, so mm-hmm. it's even less of a return on investment. But looking at the savings that the home energy efficiency program has had in the last 3 years since 2008, when the first major appropriations were put into that program, they've improved about 14,600 homes around the state at a cost from the state of $90 million. Have been not necessarily. Or even more encumbered, those are the actual changes that have been on the street, sure. And they've had up to a 33% savings to each home. So we targeted it at that program, but didn't want to just go completely aggressively and make it a grant program. We at least wanted to have the state get some investment return on that. So that was the program that we were looking at. AHFC has a number of other programs that the staff online might be able to answer some more specific questions about, but they have the rebate for buying a 5-star plus energy rated home. They have the interior or the weatherization program that Senator Thomas has received probably more letters on that in support of the work that they've done for low-income homes around the state than any other program that he's received correspondence from. It just continues to roll in. They have a second mortgage program that helps people lower their costs to improve their homes also. So a number of loan programs and a number of energy rebate programs are sort of where we came up with the mechanisms in our own thought process.
With all due respect, the weatherization program, though, is just something that's statewide. This thing here is only concentrating on where you have natural gas pipeline going in, which is essentially the lower part of the south central area as well as up to Fairbanks, and it's certainly a long ways from the rest of the state of Alaska, which I think have far higher energy costs than here. But be that as it may, that's what happens. Senator Menard.
Just one quick question. AHFC, have they talked about if they're going to have to add a staff person to run? Where do, maybe that's a question for the...
Actually, we have Dan Fowski going to be coming on. We can actually point that question to him. Okay. A couple other questions.
I wondered how the corporation was going to administer this program and if they felt that they would need a new staff person to accomplish that. And I understand about Alaska USA, and that was, you articulated that well.
Thank you.
For those homes that are already on natural gas and have already converted, is there any benefit to them by this program over here? That,
Mr. Chairman, not through this program, but you can currently get an upgrade on your the furnace or boiler or home heating appliance that you have in stock already. I forget off the top of my head the number of appliances that they've changed out, but a quick synopsis, it looks about, I think it's $8,900 to replace a new, on average, to replace a new oil furnace in the house with a more efficient model, and about $9,900 on average to replace a more efficient gas furnace. So you can use that energy efficiency rebate program for upgrading as it currently stands.
Senator Thomas.
Is that just the furnace?
No, Wagner, I'm sorry.
In terms of the energy efficiency
or is
program?
That the, if they had to put in baseboard radiators and everything, or is that just the furnace itself?
In terms of what the energy efficiency rebate provides, or
yeah.
This bill here in particular.
This bill specifically only applies to the home heating appliance.
Furnace only.
Yes, yeah. Furnace only.
So the accessories, like I said, baseboard heat is not
covered under this bill, sir.
Okay.
The boiler and not neither the lines to the house would also not be covered under this.
So what is your estimate to, like, the average, what additional cost would that be?
It's going to depend on how far...
Square footage the house is, of course.
That would actually affect the heating cost once everything is installed. With NSTAR being the only sizable gas distribution company in the entire state, the way they do it is on a cost-cause, cost-payer system. So you call up, you want gas delivered at your house, you call up NSTAR and say, I would like to have it delivered, and it's a charge of $17.64 a square or a foot for the main line to get to your as close to their house as you can. And then after that, it's $930 for the first 100 feet of feeder line from that main line to your house, and then an additional 2 feet after that. So if you're far off the path, if you have a quarter-mile-long driveway, as my parents do up in Fairbanks, it's going to be a bit of a price to get it there. But, yeah, hopefully savings that $7,500 as this program would put in place could cut down on some of those costs for the family.
Okay. The other question I had is it only for residents? If somebody has a business, I'm assuming they're not eligible to go ahead and have that. But what about if they run a business out of their house?
That is generally correct, sir. Yeah, we again stuck to the energy efficiency program, where it is only for homes and single occupancy homes or a duplex allows in the bill. You're allowed to use up to 25% of the square footage in your house. Can be commercially zoned or used for commercial purposes, but we wanted to stick to the house and stick to the programs that we have in place already.
Okay. And then what about if you're not, if somebody has a summer home along the way and wants it for their place, but they live actually out in California, they're retired, are they eligible if they're non-resident?
It needs to be an owner-occupied home, sir. So
yeah, but you can have an owner
primary
living in it. It doesn't need to be the primary. I might need to refer that one to AHFC on exactly what their regs are for living in the home versus having somebody living in the home. I don't believe it's available for a rental, but it could be for a house sitter or somebody else.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor or is that for staff? If not, thank you very much. We'll call on Dan Fowski. Are you willing to go ahead and testify or you want to answer questions afterwards?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I could offer some work if you would like. I could do that. I know I have Stacey Schubert there as well. I would like to say a couple things with your permission, sir.
Mr. Fowski, you can identify yourself on the record and go ahead.
I am Dan Fowski. I'm CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and we support this bill. There's some details that need to be worked out. We know down the way in terms of the loan management of the program. Thankful to hear Greer or Todd say that we wouldn't be talking about it'd be run similar to the rebate program, but with some differences. This is a little bit different type program, but I think the need is absolutely well documented. As you know, I've been doing work on this gas line issue, and one of the issues we've always had is a local distribution system and the conversions that have to take place in Fairbanks. Look forward to working on this. I know that this is not seeking any appropriation dollars at this point, and we'll work with staff down the road to fine-tune how this program could work. I, based on earlier testimony, we estimate it's 12,000 homes that they estimate, as they testified, to get under the EPA number. In the Fairbanks area, there's around 30,000 homes in the entire Fairbanks bowl, and so you're looking at probably a loan program in the neighborhood of about $200 million to convert all those homes without the businesses, which is not insurmountable. That's it's a big number, but when you start doing the math on the individual homes, it gets out there pretty quick. So I think that'll conclude any comments, or if we can answer any questions. I have staff here with me, and I have Stacy on hand down there, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any questions, Mr. Fowski, by members of the committee? Mr. Fowski, I guess one of the questions I have had is, where is the money going to come from? We're looking at, initially, you talked about 1,000 homes at $7,500 a piece. That works out to $7.5 million just right out of the chute. And then after that, you got $200 million to go ahead and do the 30,000 homes that are there. Where is that? Who's going to be holding the bag there? And how are you going to convince them that they're going to have, only going to have 1% on the return on their money? And that doesn't even count the delinquency.
Mr. Chairman, all due respect, that would be you. And by that, I mean when we do a subsidized loan program, we have no problem with them, other than our access to capital markets is null and void, and that you can't go sell bonds to finance something like this. It's going to take an infusion of cash from the state to do a loan program. which isn't unusual, but it's different. When you're offering up a 1% loan, we can't go capture 1% money. It's not to make a 1% loan a bad idea, but I'm answering your question that that's going to have to be a state-funded program at whatever level the legislature and subsequent to, the governor deem appropriate.
Sure. Any other questions, Mr. Falski? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Falski. If you'll stand by for more questions, since you're the prime person, I know that we have Stacy here, but if you're the person that's going to be on, we appreciate your staying on in case there are further questions.
My pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we have Jeff Jacobson. Mr. Jacobson, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Jacobson, Chief of Staff for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I would like to speak in support of Senate Bill 154. As you're aware, the high energy costs are severely impacting households throughout Alaska, and in particular in interior and rural Alaska. Additionally, the Fairbanks North Star Borough has been designated as a non-attainment area for PM2.5 by the EPA, and we must improve our air quality by 2014 or have a plan in place to do so. Currently, the borough is utilizing a state grant funds to conduct a natural gas distribution study to determine the economics of expanding our limited natural gas distribution system in the borough. In the event that natural gas is delivered to the borough either by trucking or bullet line or an in-state natural gas pipeline, borough residents need the means to convert their homes to natural gas. This bill positions our residents and the residents statewide to take advantage of lowering energy costs by using natural gas, switching from fossil fuel and wood would significantly improve our air quality. We have had limited success with improving air quality in the last year by using the wood change exchange program. We have, to date, been able to exchange out over 400 wood stove devices, in particular 32 of the hydronic outdoor boilers, which are one of our worst offenders for creating bad air quality in our borough. So we have been successful, but we have a long ways to go, and the clock is ticking in which to get an implementation plan in place that the EPA would accept. And so this program would, again, lend a lot to our state implementation plan to meet our air quality goals and also to be able to help lower our energy costs, which are virtually crippling our households. We are on the brink here of many people not being able to afford living in our community because of the rising energy costs that they are facing on a day-to-day basis. I also just wanted to thank the state of Alaska for the energy retrofit program. I personally benefited from that by having my home take advantage of that, and I'm proud to say that with all the energy retrofits that now in the winter, my home heating oil costs are only $450 a month in the winter. Before that, it was almost double. So that has been an impact, but this, again, would go a long ways to not only lowering our energy costs, but, again, improving our air quality. Additionally, we have two refineries here in the interior, and having natural gas supplied to those two refineries will also lower the energy costs for residents throughout our state. While this program for energy retrofit loan program for switching to natural gas may not affect every household throughout Alaska, lowering fuel costs, whether it's aviation fuel or home heating fuel or gasoline, because of our two refineries in the interior will have lower operating costs, could have a significant impact throughout all parts of Alaska that get fuels supplied through our refineries. Again, I'd like to speak again in support of this and urge its passage out of committee for consideration by the full Senate. Thank you very much. I'm available for any questions if you have them.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Jacobson or members of the committee? I've got a question. As we look at the distribution of the 12,000 homes that need to be converted in order to meet the air quality standards that are put forth by the federal mandate that's there, and you've got 30,000 homes, how many of those 30,000 homes are actually accessible, realizing that almost half of them have to convert over? And some of those people that are farther away within the borough makes it difficult for lines to be dug and for them to be hooked up to natural gas.
Right. Well, let me just clarify that the 12,000 home figure, if the borough did nothing else but just convert the 12,000 homes, we would meet our air quality attainment standards. So this is saying, this is in combination. So of the measures that we're taking right now through education, helping homeowners burn drier wood, storing their wood more properly, switching out their wood stoves and hydronic heaters to more efficient operations or none at all, and then also converting to natural gas, we will be able to reach that attainment goal. So it's not necessary that we have to get all 12,000 right now to reach that goal. It's if we didn't have anything else that was working, the 12,000 would be that number that we would need to convert over.
Okay.
So it didn't really answer your question directly because I don't have geographically that information. But if you look at our proposed distribution plans that we're currently looking at with our with our grant, it looks at the highest density areas for delivery, but also we're looking at other parts of the plan that would allow for independent distribution systems that might be farther out or more remote but still have some density populations in neighborhoods that a direct pipeline system to that area would not work, but maybe a tank storage system there that would then distribute through a smaller system would also be able to help those homes convert to natural gas. So that's how we're looking at reaching as many of our residents throughout the borough, maybe not on a line direct-to-direct, but perhaps multiple distribution systems throughout the borough.
And what kind of anticipation do you have for costs of outfitting the infrastructure that's going to be required to go ahead and handle an increased natural gas system like you're proposing here?
Well, that is exactly what we're undertaking right now with our state grant to look at the natural gas distribution study. So we're hoping to have that some preliminary information out by the end of the month and to the legislature for your consideration and review.
Okay. Senator Wagner.
It's not a comparison to Fairbanks in that area, but Homer has done a study. NSTAR did a study there. For the city of Homer, the basic city of Homer, I think it was $3.5 million. That's what it costs for the distribution system.
For the infrastructure.
So Fairbanks would be considerably more than that, because mm-hmm. you're probably looking at 10% of what they would be doing in Fairbanks. But you already have a pretty good start on the distribution lines, don't you?
That's right.
Senator?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Mr. Jacobson, thank you very much. We have no further questions. Next, we have Jomo Stewart. Mr. Stewart, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
If you could identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Jomo Stewart, and I am a project manager at the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, and I just happen to be the project manager for the Fairbanks North Star Borough Gas Distribution System Analysis. And I just really came to listen, but I did want to go on record stating that the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation does support SB 154. Would like to concur with and reiterate many of the statements that have been made, both by the project sponsor, staff, as well as Mr. Kowski and Mr. Jacobson, and be available to answer any questions you might have. The Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation would see SB 154 as a not a panacea, certainly regarding conversions or build-out within the Fairbanks North Star community, or Fairbanks North Star Borough and broader community, but definitely would see it as a useful and a welcome component to a larger effort that will have to happen if Fairbanks is going to be able to tap into the benefits of natural gas when it does come through. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Stewart, by members of the committee? If not, Jomo, it's good to hear from you again.
Sir, good to hear from you. Thank you.
Okay. Coming back here to the room, is there anybody else in the audience that wants to go ahead and testify, or anybody else online wants to testify? Okay. Okay, any wrap-up comments, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, none that I have. I just would make the comment in regards to the concerns about the cost of it. We were looking for a number to keep it as low as possible, but something that would offset the administrative costs of the plan, more or less, so that we weren't incurring any greater expense. So 1% might not be the magic number, but it sounded like a good starting point anyhow for what it is. And as far as the cost of converting, I think that number is relatively close to converting a fuel oil system to natural gas as far as the appliances is concerned. The lines and some of the other things that might need to be done, or somebody that has a different system, different type system, if they've got a wood-burning system, that might be a different situation. But as far as just simply replacing a fuel oil boiler with a gas boiler and having somebody do it for you, a professional, that seems like the number is relatively close. And thank you.
Okay. If there's no further questions, I want to thank you very much for presenting, and we'll...
Thank you, guys.
Next, we have Senate Bill 122 by Senator Egan on her staff. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The committee has sponsored this bill. The bill is, as introduced, is fairly straightforward. There are two sections to it. I'd like to address the second section before I address the first section. The second section of the bill has universal support, as far as we know. We've heard nothing negative about the second section of the bill. What it would do is ban the use of transfer covenants. Transfer covenants are simply a contractual obligation to pass along to the first owner the cost, a fee that's imposed upon any subsequent sale of the land. In my research, I've been unable to find how many states currently ban this practice, but I've heard anywhere from 28 to 41 as numbers. Suffice it to say that more than half the states in the United States currently ban this practice. The earliest ban that I've been able to find was in 1852, when the courts in the state of New York banned the practice as a, quote, vestige of feudalism. I really don't think we want a vestige of feudalism to remain on our statute books. In any event, if we could turn our attention to the first section of the bill, as presented, as we introduced it, the first section would mandate that title plants would be extended, the length of time that you have to hold records in a title plant would be extended from 25 years to 50 years. My understanding is you may hear testimony tonight that will reduce that number to 40. Mr. Chairman, we had expected by now, I've been working very arduously with your staff. Your staff for this committee has worked very hard on this. We had hoped to bring you tonight a committee substitute that would make some changes to this first section of the bill. The first section of the bill has been controversial. I've received comments from two entities in the state, that is to say two companies, who are opposed to the bill in its current form. We are trying to work with those people who both support the bill and those who are opposed to the bill to find language that will satisfy both parties. I wish that we had that language in black and white for you tonight, but your staff and me and the drafter are arranging to meet together to try and hammer out that language for the next time that you bring this bill up. And with that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Do you have any questions of the bill sponsored by members of the committee? Mr. Dana, if we were to go ahead and give you enough time, when could you have a committee substitute or something like it to us?
I would assume that we could probably have it to you for your next Tuesday meeting, a week from today.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how substantially different would it be from what we're seeing in front of us?
It won't be terribly different in its intent.
Mm-hmm.
There have been several ideas floated that we want to pursue. Without getting into a lot of the details,
sure.
There are concerns within the industry about offshore players coming into the industry, being able to do that, and not being able to provide customers with an adequate service. We have to explore some language to make sure that if we erect any kinds of barriers like that, we don't erect barriers to entry for American players, for particularly for Alaskan, other Alaskan businesses that want to get into the business. So that's one concern that has been raised. The other concern, there are other concerns, some of which have been presented to me as fears of what might happen later on, and we're trying to allay those fears through language. I don't think you're going to see, you may see extensive language, I don't think you'll see much different in the way of intent.
Okay. As you look at the offshore people, quote-unquote offshore people that are coming into the market, why are we opposed to more people coming into the market? Because obviously when you go ahead and buy real estate, it's one of the biggest expenditures you'll ever have in your life when you buy a house or a home. You get more people involved with that, more people with title transfers, more people with access to other plants. The price should come down from the free enterprise standpoint. Why would we be opposed to something like that?
Mr. Chairman, I think there are people in the audience today who are willing to testify and who can provide you with a better explanation than I can. But in general, the idea is not that we don't want more people in the industry. The idea is that we don't want players from, say, India or Bangladesh or other places who are not able to give you the kind of service that title insurance companies here in the state can provide. And as I said, there are people here in the audience who can explain the details of that better than I can.
With all due respect, Mr. Rowan, I think that one of the things that we see as we look at the testimony here, they are obviously employees of different companies throughout the area which have got a vested interest. They march to what makes the bottom line blacker than black. You and I and the rest of the people that are here have public policy to be concerned about, so we're protecting those people out there that do not have access to that. And so that's why I'm asking you to, why would we not be, because the stockholders that we answer to are not the people that own stock in these companies that are listed here. It's the people that either elected us or are residents of the state of Alaska. And I don't mean that in an adversarial way. I'm just saying that they may have better answers than we have because they have more knowledge. They're in the industry. But I think we as public policy people need to go ahead and also be aware of that.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we are cognizant of that. And I can say, speaking for Senator Egan, that is definitely a consideration in this bill, and we do not want to. We would like to have the best outcome for public policy. One of the unique things about this bill is that it really affects only one special interest. And in the bill and the people who have proposed the bill to us, we don't have opposition from another interest like the public, say, people who are buying houses, people who are loaning money for houses, who are issuing mortgages. None of those folks have contacted us, or none of the people I've talked to who are in those situations have expressed any interest in the bill one way or the other. Sure. The only people who have expressed an interest in this bill are title insurance companies. The dissension has been within that industry. This has made the sponsors of this bill, I guess the best way is to say, is uncomfortable.
Sure.
We do not want to be in the position of picking sides in a dispute. The sponsor of this bill, I just use the royal we, excuse me, but Senator Egan, speaking on behalf of the Labor and Commerce Committee, does not want to be put in the position of picking sides in a dispute within an industry. We would prefer that all of the industry players be on board, that they approve the language of the bill that we put forward. That's one of the reasons why you see a very simplified bill here. The first section of this bill, excuse me, as it reads, was all we were willing to introduce to begin with, for the very reason that you brought up. We are very concerned that the public interest be protected in this. And the first step in that is to make sure that within the industry there's some agreement on why they're doing what they're requesting to have done.
Does it make you kind of suspicious, though, when there's infighting within the industry as to what the real element is there?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, it makes me very suspicious, yes.
I'm assuming you don't want to expound on that.
I'd prefer not to at this time. Thanks.
With that, thank you very much for your testimony. If there's no other questions for the bill sponsor, we'll go ahead and start with our public testimony. Crystal Peltola, are you online, ma'am? Is she on?
Can you hear us?
We're looking for Crystal Peltola, Alaska USA Title Agency.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, but go ahead and identify yourself for the record who you are with, and then go ahead with your question.
Thank you. My name is Crystal Peltola. I'm the Vice President and General Manager for Alaska USA Title Agency, and I've been in the title industry for 30 years, and I'm here to speak in opposition of Senate Bill 122. Senate Bill 122 wants to increase the current title plant law requirement from 25 years to 50 years. The current plant law has been in existence for decades and has worked well for our industry. There is no value to the industry or consumers by changing something that isn't broken. The searching required by title companies in order to issue our title policies is mandated by our contracts with our national underwriters, not by the number of years of documents we are statutorily required to have within our title plants. The bill is anti-competitive since it will tend to reduce competition by reducing the number of title agencies, as this bill would double the startup costs for a new company or double the investment by existing companies, not to mention the time it would take for a new company to acquire 50 years of records versus the current 25-year requirement. Increasing the title plant requirement would only benefit a few agencies, most of which are the main proponents of this legislation, by increasing the dollar value of the plants they currently maintain. I've worked for a variety of title agencies over the years, and my experience with claims is that the length of records retained in our title plants has no bearing on the claims or losses. Again, no reason to change a law that already works. There have been substantial technological changes over the years that have allowed broader access to electronic records, thereby keeping costs down for consumers and allowing for more competition. This bill would mandate a step back in time by mandating that older, outdated title plants be expanded. And again, the existing laws have been in effect for a very long time. They work well. There is nothing indicative in the current language that even states you can have something older if you choose to as an individual agency. The 25-year rule has worked effectively for many years. I've worked with various underwriters over my tenure in the industry, and we've had no problems with the way the current law stands. This would increase cost to consumers as well as keep new competition from being able to enter the market, keeping the cost down, that's all I had to say. We are opposed to this. We think it's anti-consumer and anti-competitive, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those now.
Do we have any questions for Ms. Peltola, my members of the committee? I do have one question, Ms. Peltola. You talked about the 25-year limit that's in place now. How about some of the mortgages that are out there that go longer than 25 years?
There is nothing, first of all, there's a lot of mortgages any longer that are 10, 15, even 20 years. But the length of any claim of lien, whether it be a mechanics lien or a mortgage or a judgment, has no bearing on how long we search or how far back we search. There's no correlation to the two. So, you could have a 50-year mortgage, and we're going to be dictated by our underwriting contracts as to how we have to search property and what is important. If there were 50-year mortgages that were common, our underwriting contracts would say we'd have to go back 50 years, regardless of whether there were any plant law.
And then if you're dealing with a piece of property that's got some type of hazardous material on there that's dumped there during World War II, how do you go ahead and protect that consumer if you've only got a 25-year plan?
Well, again, what we have to search and how we have to search are mandated by our underwriting contracts. It has no bearing on how many documents we have within our title plant. If we knew, let's say, that there was a gas station or a hazardous material someplace, we would have to go back and search further. If that meant we had to go to a recording office, to the BLM records, to the railroad, lease land, we go and search any number of areas depending on the type of search we need to do and the players that are involved. Again, no bearing on that search process and how many records we are required by statutory to have at our fingertips within our title plans.
Any further questions of Ms. Baltola by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you very much, and I'm available at any time for further questions if you have them.
Okay, thank you. Next we have Raymond Davis. Mr. Davis, are you on, sir?
Yeah, hi. This is Raymond Davis. I'm a vice president at Old Republic Title Company in Seattle. The reason I'm on the line is that we work closely with Crystal and Alaska USA Title Agency. We're their underwriter in a sense, and we provide the financial backing behind the title policies that they issue. And you know, we agree with everything Crystal said, and we're also in opposition to the Section 1 changes. I listened to what Mr. Owens, the staff person, talked about, and I was very interested in that. I think he's showing me that he's on top of this and understands it. I think quite well. I do think there's been somewhat of a misunderstanding, however, on a very basic level. And as Crystal pointed out, the whole point of this bill, unfortunately, or not the bill, Section 1 of the bill, excuse me, is to give, unfortunately, just to be real brutal about it, two companies in Anchorage that have this 50-year-old title plant, and it would effectively give them a monopoly on all future business in Anchorage. And in anticipation of this legislation passing, they're already talking about offering subscription fees to the other title companies to use their plant for $7,500 a month, $90,000 a year. So, unfortunately, this is, as I'm sure you senators deal with all the time, this is all about money, and it's about two companies trying to create an effective monopoly over the business. One of the things that I pointed out in the letter that I sent to all the senators a couple of weeks ago was that really the state DNR kind of has preempted this field, and really the Alaska Title Plan statute is kind of an anachronism. It made sense 30 years ago, but it's making less and less sense in today because of technology and websites and stuff like that. And in your predecessors in 96 directed the DNR to start a new indexing system where properties are and records are all kept by location, which really effectively preempts the whole point of these old title plants. And what Crystal didn't talk about is what we can do now, and what she can do is just go online and go directly to the government records and search titles that way. And I'd urge you to really think about where this is going. I think Senator Olson, I'm not too sure who's talking at times since I'm just listening in on this, but mentioned, I mean, the real goal here should not be to limit competition. The goal really should be to expand it. And really what I suggest staff might want to do here is to look at this whole subject on a broader level. And maybe it's time to start repealing things and maybe open this a little bit more. You're still going to make sure, obviously, that the public is protected and you don't have fly-by-night operators taking advantage of things. But, we've got to get past these old title plan, private records, paper stuff, and kind of move into the 21st century in this area, and that's a real threat to the guys who have big investments in those plants. And I can understand that. If I were in their shoes, I'd be threatened by it also. But this is what we have to deal with today, and things are moving along, and we need to be looking out for what's most efficient and what's most effective for the public. So we speak in opposition to the legislation and look forward to perhaps working with staff for alternatives that might be that could actually improve matters instead of kind of trying to roll them back. Thank you for your time. Do you have any questions I can answer?
Do you have any questions for Mr. Thomas, my members of the committee? If not, I do have a question for you, Mr. Davis. With all due respect,
yeah,
your company's down there in Seattle. You're the underwriter for what's going on. One of the things that we have up here is with the two title plants that you talked about. At least if we have a problem, we've got somebody local that we can go to, and they're under state law. If we have to go down to Seattle for the consumer, if he's got a problem with the title company and you're named as a defendant, then he's got to go out, or whoever that person is has to go all the way to Seattle. And because of that, I see that.
That's an excellent point. The way it works, and I don't know if you want to bore you with the gory details, is that we issue the policies, but only through an Alaska-based company. We don't have any offices up there, but we work with Alaska USA, and so they are on site, and that's a good point. I mean, you want to keep the brick and mortar in the state, but the financial backing for all of these companies now is coming from out of state. I mean, that's just the reality to it. So the policy, the insurance part of the process is coming from out of state companies as we speak. So, but I appreciate the comment.
Okay, any further questions by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Davis.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mike Price. Mr. Price.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, thank you for the opportunity to speak today in favor of Senate Bill 122.
Mr. Price, if you'll identify yourself for the record, please.
I am Michael Price. I am currently the president of the Alaska Land Title Association, which is a nonprofit association of all the title companies and agencies and most of the underwriters in this state. I also am, along with my wife, am the owner of Matsu Title Insurance Company and Wasilla and Fidelity Title Insurance Company in Anchorage. And I'm also a 40-year real estate practitioner, lawyer. I was twice chairman of the real estate section of the Alaska Bar Association. So today I'd like to speak in favor of Senate Bill 122 as it now stands, and also as the proposed committee substitute, which we have been talking about, and answer any questions. I certainly disagree with the testimony of Ms. Patel and Mr. Davis, both of whom, when I was a lawyer, I used to represent both of them at the time. Let me first start with the good things about this bill and the committee substitute. The transfer fee, I don't think, is objectionable to anybody. As within the last 3 years, 41 states have adopted this model bill. It was proposed by the American Land Title Association, supported by the Realtors, American Realtors Association, and the Home Builders Association. 41 states in 3 years have passed this transfer fee bill. We would wholeheartedly support and suggest that Alaska become the 42nd state to ban transfer fees for developers. The second part of the bill, which I don't think is confrontational, is a section of the bill that in the committee substitute will at least show that we are going to try to get all property that is examined by a title examiner and insured by an insurance company in this state to be examined by a member, a resident of the state, licensed by Ms. Hall's Division of Insurance for the sole purpose of we are regulated, my company is regulated, my individual title examiners and escrow officers are regulated, but with the proliferation of the internet and the documents that are on the internet, we see a growing trend of people wanting to examine titles from India and the Philippines and Costa Rica, for which Mrs. Hall has no jurisdictional reach as it currently sits. We also see these national underwriters, which Mr. Davis represents one in Old Republic, examining titles from outside of the state of Alaska with examiners, again, that have not been licensed in the state of Alaska, but could examine from public records or from records which they have outside. Within the last 3 or 4 years, about 13 states in the United States have adopted laws very similar to what we propose, that Alaskan resident, Alaska licensed title examiner, must examine and sign the preliminary commitment and issue the policy for policies being issued in this state. Where we come down to the controversy is the first section of the proposed bill, and that is to do two things. One is to change the current plant law, passed in 1974 at 25 years, to what we're going to propose is 40 years. It initially was drafted in this first bill at 50. There was some objection internally that 50 years was too long. I was the one that came up with 50 years because the state's 50 years old, and in the relative age of states, that's not that long of an examination period. But clearly, the association supports going more than 25 years because you, Mr. Chairman, properly pointed out the great majority of mortgages are 30-year mortgages. There are some 40. Yeah, there's some 10 and there's some 15-year mortgages, but the great majority are 30. So currently under the existing law, I don't have to go back, and I technically, under state law, I don't have to go back and find any mortgage that's 26 years old. I couldn't be charged with violating state law if I didn't find something, but it was still outstanding for four more years. The great majority of states in the western United States still have title plant laws. Mr. Davis knows that. Everybody knows that. But 25 years is too long, too short of a period of time, especially since Alaska doesn't have a curative provision. A lot of states, especially those states on the East Coast have curative provisions that say, since they have 200-year histories, they'll say, gee, if a deed of trust has been outstanding for 80 years, you can ignore it because more likely than not, it's gone a long way. We don't have that curative provision. So all the association, which represent, this was unanimously supported and passed by the Board of Directors of the Alaska Land Title Association, from title agencies from Ketchikan to Fairbanks, all we're saying is let's go from 25 years to 40 years. We don't think that's an unnecessary burden. Those records can be basically downloaded by computer directly from the recorder's office at a relatively small fee. I did it when I started Fidelity Title. It's not an anti-competitive thing. In fact, that's sort of the last thing I want to talk about. But the second portion of this proposed bill corrects, in my opinion, what might have been a mistake in 2002 when this legislature created two different types of title companies. If I have Matsu Title in the Valley, which only my wife and I own as local residents, I have to have a title plant. But in 2002, this legislature said, gee, if you're a standalone title company, you have to have a title plant. But if you are a consortium of two or more companies, you can have a joint plant, which doesn't have to have a title plant. It can examine from the public records. By the way, the statute didn't allow me at Matsu Title in Wasilla to start examining from the public records. I'm still required by the Division of Insurance to have a title plant because I'm not a consortium of two or more companies. Mr. Davis, representing Old Republic, a national insurance underwriter, and, for instance, Alaska USA Title, created a joint plant, a consortium of two or more companies. And simply by doing that, they no longer have to have a physical title plant, which I do on the Palmer-Wasilla Highway. They can go down and examine strictly out of the public records, or they can download the public records from the recorder's office. We think the Alaska Land Title Association is a consortium of companies, again, not for anti-competitive reasons, but we think that we ought to change that law back to we are a title plant state. Alaska, as far as I know, is currently the only state in the union which has two different types of title companies, one that is imposed with the burden of having a title plant and the other which is freed of that simply by creating any type of fictitious limited liability company which says, gee, we'll get together and have a limited liability. We'll have a joint plant. You heard testimony that this would increase cost to the consumer. I don't think it is because our costs are set by the Division of Insurance. If I have to have between 25 years and 40 years, I can't pass those costs on to the consumer. You also heard that title plants are an archaic system and going away. Well, Mr. Bilbrey, who is the president of Old Republic, has certainly indicated to me that he believes in title plants. He comes from a state which has title plants. Mr. Davis would say, let's do away with title plants, and let's simply, and Ms. Patola would say, let's only rely upon our contract with our underwriter. Well, I don't think that's what this state should do. This state, you all, and the Division of Insurance protects the public. Let me just remind you all that 5 years ago, Countrywide Home Loans was the largest home lender in the country. They're gone. Okay, so let's just say, as she's indicated, we should rely upon the dictates that our underwriter imposes upon us, and our underwriter imposes us on us only a 25-year plant law, a 25-year search. What if the next underwriter says, you know what, I don't even care if there's a search. Search it for 1 year. Search it for 2 years. We're an underwriter. How much it takes to be an underwriter in this state? $1 million. Nothing. One claim could wipe that out. And so from my standpoint, it is not, you should not allow the underwriters, which are now, by the way, only essentially four companies in the United States, you should not allow them to set what kind of title examination should occur in the state for Alaskans. It should be the state. And you certainly shouldn't say, gee, if you're a standalone mom and pop company in Wasilla, you have to have a title plant. But if you're just a couple of companies, one from Seattle or Minnesota and one from Anchorage, you don't have to have a title plant. And you certainly shouldn't allow underwriters to say what is or is not a valid search.
Mr. Price, with all due respect, we have several people after you. We've got only 20 minutes in the committee meeting to go ahead and hear this. Otherwise, we will go ahead and we will have other people testify at the next committee meeting. So if you want to wrap up.
No, that'll be fine. If there are no other questions, the Alaska Land Title Association, not for anti-competitive reasons, but strictly for trying to clear up what was and is a bad two sets of laws, supports this bill. We've been working on it for a year, and it is supported by everybody except the two speakers that you've heard previously. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to.
Do we have any questions from members of the committee for Mr. Price? I've got a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Davis brought up, from Old Republic, brought up the idea that there are two land plan companies here in the state of Alaska. Is that true?
There are two title companies in Anchorage. I think what he's trying to say is that there are two, that my company and First American has a joint plan.
Okay, I don't want an interpretation. Okay. He said that there's two companies here in the state of Alaska, and those are the people that he called a monopoly. That's not true. That's his interpretation of what's there. Are there two plants here in the state of Alaska?
Oh, no. There's 20 plants in the state of Alaska. I think what he was referring to is an Anchorage recording district.
Okay.
Which is the largest recording district, and there is one, two,
and if that's
three.
If that's the case, what is their normal subscription to their information?
Subscription is the cost of downloading all the information. It costs about $7,000-$8,000 a company, or if you are doing it all your own, it costs about $10,000-$12,000 to download that information on a monthly basis.
And so are his prices relatively in the general ballpark of $7,500 a month if they're going to?
I would think that's true. But
$90,000 a year?
But the number which he's being provided or he's throwing out comes from a non-profit corporation that does not exist to make money, and therefore I would suggest that his comment that it was for anti-competitive purposes misplaced.
It could be, but that's your interpretation. I just want to know what he said and whether what he says is true. And how do we go ahead and protect the protect the public that's buying this kind of stuff because they're wanting to buy some real estate to have a home, the American dream, while the real estate market that you represent has put this whole country into a nightmare over the last several years with the 2008 housing bubble that burst. And so there's a lot of suspicion about people that are out there in your industry that put us into a very bad economic situation.
Well, not
how do you defend that?
Not my industry, because it was the mortgage industry. I only insure the loans. I don't make the loans. I didn't make the Alt-A or the subprime loans. But I can say that it is not that difficult. I'm not a billionaire. I started Fidelity Title 6 years ago with my wife. You can download. You can buy for minimum sums of money from the from the recorder's office the images and download them directly from their computer to your computer for tens of thousands of dollars. So anybody who wants to start a title company in Anchorage, they can get 40 years worth of images for a pittance of money compared to, as you say, the very first time somebody makes an insurance policy on their house. The very first policy they issue is a $200,000 policy. You want somebody to have some skin in the game. You don't want somebody that simply says, gee, I can, for a $100 filing fee with the corporation section, create myself a title agency. But to answer your question, there are numbers of title companies in Anchorage. There's 23 title companies around the state. In just about every jurisdiction, there are more than one. This has nothing to do with competition, but anybody can start a title agency in this state for a relatively small amount of money. But what you want them to have is access to every document, so when they insure title, it is a good title and not have a claim that they have to file against some examiner who from Florida who issued a policy, or heaven forbid, some examiner in the Philippines.
Any further questions, Mr. Price, but members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have Terry Bryan. Mr. Bryan, are you up here for? Mr. Bryan, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, I'm Terry Bryan, Vice President of First American Title Insurance Company and State Manager for First American Title Insurance Company, a 35-plus-year resident of Alaska. And as First American Title Insurance Company, we operate both as one of those bad title companies and underwriters and as a limited producer, an agent within the side of the state of Alaska. We're in approximately 10 communities throughout the state of Alaska with record operations, as well as having agents selling First American Title Insurance product as well. We, First American Title Insurance Company, wish to state that we support Senate Bill 122 as it's being worked through in the committee substitute. Rather than restate some of Mr. Price's comments, I would just like to identify three or four issues that may have not been as clear. One, the price for title insurance product per se is not set by the state of Alaska. The individual underwriters or the title companies selling the insurance through their agents submit their pricing through the Division of Insurance with justification, with rationalization, and upon approval of those rates, then we're used and required to use those rates. So it's a file and approved state, so not set by the state of Alaska, approved and accepted by the state of Alaska. Second issue, there was a discussion about we should just do away with title plants and so forth from a representative from Seattle. The state of Washington has a mandatory required plant law, and I believe it's between 40 and 50 years. So it works in Washington as well as Oregon and other Northwest states. Also, being an underwriter and being a title insurance company, administer underwriting contracts or contracts with individual agents. I don't know of any language that requires a specific agent to have a specific age of plant. In language of the contracts I have been privy to or been aware of, identified certain reasonable search criteria and standards, but no chronological identification, because each state, each environment is somewhat different. We, the Alaska Land Title Association, feel that the 40 years for a required title plant is an acceptable one based on the history of our state, history of our company. Another item that was brought up was from yourself, Mr. Chairman, the title industry. I do not take issue. I just find me with your comment in reference to the mess we're in. We are in a mess we're in, nationally and regionally without question. I'm proud to say that the title insurance industry is probably the only real estate-related industry that comes through this process unscathed. Mortgage industries, banks, national, regional banks, real estate companies, controlled business environments may have a black eye. The title insurance industry itself came through and have not been portrayed in the press, and to my knowledge, has been the good guy, if there's a good guy, in this political or in this economic dilemma.
And what's the reason for that? Better lawyers?
better lawyers. We pay lawyers a lot, yes, sir. More than in that we facilitate the transaction, we do not negotiate or barter the transaction. We insure the consumer, we do not insure the bank, or we insure the bank, but we insure the product that's delivered. We do not deliver nor negotiate the product. So we are a side to the industry. The $7,500 number bouncing around, that's kind of an interesting number, because $7,500, our company purchased another company several years ago and operated as a sister organization for quite a few years. The contracted rate not to make money but to cover costs, that First American Title released to their sister company for access to the largest plant in Alaska was, coincidentally, $7,500 a month, because that was my cost. As Mr. Price identified, it's a nonprofit company. We took the expenses, divided by the number of people. It equaled $7,500. Pretty magic math. So just trying to respond to some questions. I'll just pause at this point and ask for any questions. I'll be glad to respond to any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Bryan by members of the committee? If not, how many claims against a title company are there over whatever period of time there is?
It varies dramatically, mm-hmm. From locale and region, and the local jurisdictions. Some states have statutes that are not as clearly defined as Alaska, so they may have a higher rate of claims. Title insurance itself is a preventive insurance and a proactive insurance that we are retrospective. We insure the past, so we require those plants to search, insure the past, so that our claims are very, very low compared to a 16-year-old young man driving an automobile. So our claims are going to be dramatically lower because we invested to insure the past. So there's really no way to answer your number other than your question other than numbers, and every company can give you different numbers, and I can so if you want to rephrase that, or I'll try to answer your concern, but I can't tell you how many claims we've got.
One of the comments that was made by the previous speaker was that the underwriters have only $1 million that they've got to have for coverage. Is that set by the state?
The bonding requirement is, I'm trying to remember, but the bonding requirement from the state of Alaska for the licensing of an insurance company is an initial $1 million for the bonding. However, we would still have dramatic obligations through civil court and through legal court to provide coverage for any consumer, or, you know, with us being Alaska-based, we're going to be paying regardless. So that bonding
is
bonded with the state. It's not coverage.
It's required by the state, so that number is required by the state.
The bond is, yes.
Okay. Any further question by Mr. Bryan, by members of the committee?
Okay. Thank you.
No further questions. Roger Forshinger. Identify yourself for the record, please, who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony.
I'm Roger Forshinger. I'm president and owner of Yukon Title Company in Fairbanks.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Yukon Title is insures conveyances in the most northern 11 recording districts in Alaska. So our perspective is a little bit different than the testimony you've heard so far, in that we represent buyers of real estate in villages and in small communities in Alaska, headquartered in Fairbanks. I'm an old style title guy. You know, what we do is the same thing that we've done for 100 years. You know, it really hasn't changed an awful lot. Ray Davis and the other underwriters would like you to think that we really are just a distribution system for their title policies. That's just not the fact. You know, we're there for the consumer, we're there for the customer. And a lot of the testimony you've heard this evening is misleading. For instance, you heard testimony that I'm testifying in favor of SB 122.
And the committee substitute that's going to be coming?
And the committee substitute. Okay. You know, one comment that you heard is creating this plant law would in fact increase the cost to the consumer, meaning, I guess, increased rates, title rates. Since 2002, title companies have been able to open without title plants, and we have not seen title rates go down one nickel. So there's no evidence whatsoever it would increase cost to the consumer. In fact, you know, there was a title plant law on the books since statehood until 2002, where it was changed dramatically, allowing certain kinds of companies to open without title plants. I can tell you, beginning in 2002, I could have created such a company and stopped posting my title plant, which cost me $7,000 or $8,000 a month to post. I didn't do that because it's not proper for me to do. It doesn't provide my consumer, my customer, with a decent product. Part of the committee substitute, you'll see there is a grandfather clause in that, which will not impact, this law will not impact any existing title company in Alaska. In other words, those title companies that are currently operating without title plans won't be required to acquire a title plan. So I'm a little confused about some of the testimony because it just doesn't make sense. I think the customer and the consumer is better served by a title company that examines out of a title plant, and I'd ask you to please consider passing on this bill. And I'd answer any questions.
Do we have any questions of Mr. Bryan by members of the committee? The question I do have is that apparently Alaska is somewhat unique in that it has two types of title-type companies. And I'm not, I don't know anything about real estate, except I know that whoever we pay a lot of money to for whatever else, to get a house where it ever happens to be.
Sure.
Why can't you use the economies of scale where you have a number of companies that consolidate themselves and are able to subscribe to a service that provides the same thing at one lung operation out in wherever it happens to be? Why can't you use, what's wrong with that picture?
You can absolutely do that. I'm a huge believer in that. But the point of the existing law now is if you create such a company, you don't have to have any subscription service whatsoever. You do not have to have a title plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other question has to do with, as you're apparently more familiar with, people in rural Alaska are obviously dealing with real estate as well. Why should I tell the person that elected me from Shishmaref or Shaktulik that, this is a good bill? Why would he say, yeah, you ought to be for this bill?
I'm glad you brought up that particular area because we do insure in Shishmaref and we do insure in Nome
difference between Shishmaref and Nome. Nome has been there for 100 years as an incorporated city. Shishmaref is eroding away. There won't be any real estate there.
I understand.
So I'm not sure that you're correct and that you are insuring companies out there.
Oh yeah, we absolutely are. We're insuring. Yeah, we do insure. We have a title plan for Shishmaref.
Give me an example.
Well, I can't without looking at my title order book.
But it sounds like the testimony of Mr. Davis was. I can't get a hold of him. He's out in Seattle.
No. I mean, I wish I could tell you which company insured your property in Nome. If I insured your property in Nome, I don't know if I did. I don't know without looking. But I have a title plant that I can go to and find out very quickly.
Just for information, I don't live in Nome. I live in Gallup. Any further questions, Mr. Forsheider?
No.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the building or online that wants to go ahead and testify? I'm going to hold this bill over, and Ms. Hall, if you'd be available the next time we're here, I've got some questions and maybe we could meet in my office sometime along the way so I can clarify some of these questions. We won't take up committee time to go ahead and do that. And for
I can come back also.
Sure. And if we want something on the record, we'll go ahead and have you come on back.
She likes flying on a plane between the acres.
Okay.
You like to fly on the planes between here and
there. Closing remarks, Mr. Rowland, before we set this bill aside? If not, we'll go ahead and announce that there's not going to be a hearing on Thursday, so the earliest we'll meet is next Tuesday, and we'll bring these bills up again and take a look at them, and we'll decide. Well, in my office, if it's going to be a Tuesday or Thursday. So with that, this meeting is adjourned.